Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women around the country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any questions that you'd like to send in, you can write to me at bonk@aol.com, and we'll try to address them. Just like to make an announcement before I introduce my guest for tonight. Our upcoming healing weekend is going to be taking place in Philadelphia at the end of April. If any of you are interested in joining me there, where you'll have lots of other women who are in your situation who can help you move towards that healing place just by meeting other women who understand your pain and who can share your pain without you even ever having to say a word. It's just so validating. And we always have wonderful speakers there that help you on your journey. We share, we cry, we laugh, we form friendships that last for many years to come. So if you are interested, please drop me a line at bonk@aol.com. And I'll be happy to send you details. Tonight I have a very special guest. He's a dear friend of mine and a very big mover and a shaker in our straight wives community. So I'd like to introduce Deborah Sutton. And welcome back, Deborah. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Bonnie?
Oh, I'm doing good. Trying to get past so much of the hurt that so many people have gone through this week, you know, because of the hurricane. And, you know, losing homes and losing businesses from a natural disaster, and of course, most importantly, losing their lives. You know, when you think how many people died from this terrible, catastrophic incident, you know, you wake up one morning thinking that your life is just going to be another day, and you're struck down and unable to survive it. You know, it's a very scary feeling to me, so I'm so happy that the storm you know, passed through, did, you know, a lot of damage, but most of our, you know, friends and neighbors and members of our support network were safe, even though many of them were in the storm of the path. Did the hurricane affect you in Texas at all, Deb?
Not at all. And I've been through many storms in Texas and Florida and North Carolina, places I've lived. We weren't affected here.
It's really scary, though, isn't it?
It is, going through all that. Happened to leave your home. A lot of times we stayed and didn't leave. There were times we had to leave, though. When I had,
I know, it's very scary. They evacuated 1.5 million people in Florida. And, you know, there was terrible damage, but not as bad as it could be. But I just felt so bad for the people in Haiti. And they said only 1% of the people had their houses still intact. And when you think about it, 99% of the people lost everything. It was a very horrible feeling. And especially in an island like Haiti, because, you know, they never built up from the previous storms, that there was just so much wreckage still there, and now just devastated again. That's why I always tell people you have to appreciate what you have and never take it for granted. And I think sometimes, you know, we lose sight of what's really important in life. And it only takes one storm like this to destroy lives to make you realize how lucky you are. And I don't ever take that for granted. Right, Deb?
Right.
I think that you have very much the same philosophy, too, right?
I do. Even going through this experience with my divorce and all, it made me appreciate things so much more.
So let's talk a little bit about you first, Deborah. For people who don't know you, first of all, you've written a wonderful book. Talk to people a little bit about that.
Oh, Signs of a Gay Husband. Well, I wrote that, you know, while I was in, well, when I first went through my divorce, I didn't do anything for a couple of years. I couldn't concentrate enough to do anything, but after I joined Straight Wives Club, you know, I started writing, and really I felt like I was purging myself. The group really helped, you really helped, and I was able to write and share with the group. And then
tell people a little bit about your marriage, Deborah.
I was married 22 years and didn't know that he was gay until the end of the marriage as we were divorcing. And, you know, he wanted a divorce, he wanted out, and I didn't know why, and I was looking for answers. I was researching narcissism and midlife crisis, and then finally I looked up gay husbands, and I found you, Bonnie, and everything you wrote just rung true for my life. This is what I'd been living in. But once I left and moved back to my home state of Texas, I heard that he made sexual advances to a man we knew, an acquaintance of both of ours, so that's when I looked up, you know, gay husband. And I did ask him, and he denied it. And I talked to him for about 6 more months. I wasn't bringing it up. I was hoping he would tell me the truth, and it wasn't coming. And I brought it up again, and he never spoke to me again. So, you know, he knew I knew. And I started putting a lot of other things together.
Right. Can you give people some clues of what you found?
Excuse me?
Can you tell people some of the clues that you found or hints that you found?
I found gay porn on the computer, and he blamed me. And I didn't even tell him it was gay porn I found. I just told him I found porn on the computer. And he said that, you know, I had been messing around on the computer, and I gave us a virus, or he turned it around on me. And, you know, all that started coming together. I started remembering the gay porn and the man that called my house because my husband didn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
The man was pretty upset because he missed the cookout.
Of course.
I guess he was talking in, like, code. He said, you tell him, you know. So, you know, that he was supposed to meet me for a cookout. And that didn't, at the time, that didn't make sense to me. But it was a conversation I didn't forget. And about a year later, I Googled the word cookout, and it's like a slang for oral sex.
Hmm. This was a world that was foreign to you, right?
It was a world I knew nothing about.
And I think that's what's so strange, that many of our women are just so blindsided by this world. You know, they're totally unfamiliar with homosexuality other than to say, no, I have a gay friend here or there. But, you know, they never really have understood this whole concept of how could you have a gay husband who married you if you're straight. You know, it's not like a guy marrying a guy. This is a guy marrying a girl. So why would his love fade, or why would it not last, or why would he want something else, or why weren't you enough for him? You know, these are all the questions that women start asking when there's any kind of suspicion or knowledge going on this. So after you found out, Deborah, I mean, did you confront your husband with this?
By then, you know, we had filed for divorce. Our divorce wasn't final, but I had already moved away. We were still talking, and I confronted him over the phone, you know, about the man that he made sexual advances to, and he denied
it. What did he have to say about that?
He denied it.
Uh-huh.
And became angry and said he was going to go burn the man's house down.
So did that give you any relief as far as feeling maybe you made a mistake?
Did it give me any relief as far as...
Like maybe now
I,
you thought maybe it wasn't a mistake and he wasn't involved with him.
I tried to put that away and not believe it, but it just kept coming back, along with the other things.
Uh-huh.
Like the gay porn.
I think you know that once the words are said or once the words are spoken, you can never really go back.
No.
You know, once a man reveals this in any form, it's not like you can take it back, you know, whatever he said. Because I know women who try to just ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
And who try to just move on and, you know, not have to make that part of the moving on, you know, situation. But, you know, it certainly does have to take its effect, or it takes a toll on someone, right?
Right, it does.
In the beginning, when you found out about your husband, were you blaming yourself at all?
I didn't really blame myself. I felt sorry for him.
Uh-huh.
I didn't think that I made him gay or any of that. I just felt really sorry for him for about 2 years.
Uh-huh. And did you stay with him during those 2 years, then?
No, we weren't together anymore.
Uh-huh.
And we quit talking. And that benefited me so much, not to have contact with him, because that's when my mind really started to clear. And I really began to get a clear picture of what really went on in my marriage. You know, all the disappearances when I didn't know where he was, and got a clear picture of the whole thing.
So maybe you can address when women say that their husbands can't be cheating on them because they know where they are all the time. What do you tell them?
Oh, I mean, my husband and I spent a lot of time together, but I think if they have time to run to the grocery store or the Home Depot, they have time to cheat. And, you know, I would maybe thought that at one point because we were always together and I didn't see any signs of him cheating with women. And I didn't suspect the men, but yes, they make time. I don't believe, you know, so many of us go years in a sexless marriage, and I don't believe they're not having sex.
Well, I agree with you. You may not be having it, but they're having it with someone else.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be any kind of personal involvement. It can just be, you know, 30-second sex in a restaurant, in a booth in Macy's. Could be anywhere.
Right.
Just to satisfy a need. It doesn't have to have any emotional connection, right?
Right.
And I think that's one thing that we've all learned is that it's a sexual act. It only takes a moment, but there's a need for it. So for some reason, they keep having this need to keep doing it. You know, and a lot of times when women ask me, can he change? Can he, what, is he willing to give all this up, you know, for some kind of tryst in bed? You know, is that more important than we are? You know, they're missing the whole point that when somebody is gay and wants gay sex, that's because of their identity of who they are.
Right.
And they can only live a lie for so long pretending to be somebody who they're not, right?
It's true. My ex-husband started having a lot of problems from, I feel like it was from him living with in the closet. And living a lie for so long, he started having mental breakdowns. He had psychosis, you know.
Uh-huh.
He had episodes, like 3 or 4 episodes of psychosis. One he was hospitalized for. I think it was getting to him finally. And this is
and
when he wanted out.
But he didn't make any confession to you, right?
No, he didn't.
So all these years, he's never come clean, right?
Never.
And I think that's the saddest part of all, to leave somebody hanging and not, I mean, look, you can deal with things a lot better if you know what you're dealing with, right?
Right.
Would you have felt better if he would have said to you, look, honey, I have something to tell you?
I would have felt better if he would have told me the truth. But I've learned and accepted to go on without his confession or apology. Or the closest I ever got to an apology was a message from his mother where he said that he knew he owed me a lot of amends. But those were just words. He never planned on making an amends. That was the closest he ever came. But he couldn't even tell me that to my face.
So I think that, you know, men a lot of times say to me it's going to really hurt their wives if they find out the truth. And I tell them it's really going to hurt them if they don't find out the truth. Do you agree with that?
I agree. Just living in that confusion, in that confusing marriage, it's, I can't even really call it a marriage. Living in that for so long was damaging.
Very.
To both of us.
And I think, I don't think people realize how damaging it is, right?
Right.
Like I was talking tonight to one woman, you know, from our group over, you know, the last couple of days, and she said, and it really hurt me when she said this. She said, you know, now that my husband's coming out, you know, he has all these people who are cheering him on and how brave he is and how authentic he is, and he should be congratulated. They're getting gifts and money, I'm sure, and other products. And yet, it was very brave of him, but what about us? What about the wife? Why isn't she getting credit for anything except for being a victim? and then claiming it's because she makes herself a victim. So at least if you could say, well, what do you think about that?
Well, I don't think it's fair that they're called brave after the years they lived a lie and drug a woman into their lie.
Uh-huh.
So that they could appear, you know, straight. I don't think it's brave. But, the ones that do apologize and do right by their families, I give them more credit than I give the men that just walk away and never admit the truth.
And that's so true. I'm glad you brought that out up, Deborah, because a lot of times I think that, first of all, the men who pick us out to marry us, we do set a certain prototype that they're looking for. And basically we're women who are helpers and who are kind and who are accepting. And I know that you may not feel sometimes it may be conscious, sometimes it may be subconscious. So they're looking for someone who, if their secret does get out, is going to be understanding, accepting, forgiving. And that would be the reason why they would pick any one of us, because we're always helping somebody. So, you know, now it's a matter that if they could be honest with us and tell us this is the reason the marriage is failing, it has absolutely nothing to do with you, it has everything to do with me. You know, I'm learning that I'm a gay man. I didn't think it would be that much of an issue or a problem, because I think that a lot of them think that if they get married, then the problem won't be there anymore and they can just keep moving on and lead that straight life. They don't know how difficult that's going to be. I think if they did, they wouldn't even bother trying, because it wouldn't work out. But if they could just tell us the truth, then I think that many of us could just learn to accept it, you know, maybe forgive it, if the guy's going to be responsible to the family and to you for the rest of, you know, your days, and try to, you know, move on as friends through that. Do you think that would work better?
Oh, I do. I think it would work much better the cruel way my ex-husband ended it, and he didn't care, you know, what happened to me, you know, once he wanted out. And I spent all those years with him supporting him and anything he wanted to do. So, I mean, I would have been homeless if it wasn't for my family, you know, when I first left. So.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I tell guys that, you know, the best thing you can do is just be honest and tell them that you tried your best to be somebody who you're not, but it's just not working, and you didn't understand it until recently when your urges got stronger. And, you know, I think that women can understand that, I mean, on some level. I mean, they're going to be hurt and devastated, but I think about all the women. I talked to one this week who was hurting so badly because it's been 30-some years of her marriage, and that's a long time to invest with someone and not get back a return.
Right.
And, you know, we make all kinds of excuses for these guys, you know, before we get to the fact that they're narcissistic. But it's interesting to see how some people say, well, I'm a Libra, he was a Taurus, you know, the signs didn't blend. No, the signs have nothing to do with it. The fact that he's gay doesn't blend.
Right.
Or they'll say, oh, he's from the country and he doesn't like city folk, you know, he's quiet and he likes to, you know, be on his own. No, it has nothing to do with it. You know, don't look for excuses, you know, to change who he is when he is who he is. He has to just come up and be honest with it, right?
Right. And that's, you know, being brave when the man does come out and tell his family, tell his wife the truth.
And like I say, women can work with that. They just can't work with, you know, when it happens to be when you're living a lie, you continue a lie, you blame your wife for everything. I mean, you got to take responsibility. You didn't do this purposely to hurt her or to trick her. You were hoping it would work out. And this is what I tell our men. You know, this was not something you were trying to trick your wife with, or because you hate women. You loved her, and you were trying to be a husband to her. It just wasn't possible because you're gay. So just let go and be honest about it, right?
Right, and I think they care for their wives as much as they can, but it's not like a husband loves his wife. I mean, he can't. He's gay.
Right, and in time, that care turns to resentment because he really doesn't want to be there.
Right.
Now, even if he's protecting, even the ones who go to the extreme to protect who they are and their way of life, they really don't want to be there. And so
they don't want to have to make love
to you and have to go to bed with you and be compassionate with you. You know, they don't want to touch you. I always say it's so ironic because just like you're thinking of 100 ways to trap them to make love to you, he's thinking of the same 100 ways that he can say no to you. So, you know, there's no balance there. You know, you're both fighting for the same, you know, against different odds there. What you want and what he wants are two very different things. And, you know, it was very interesting that one of the areas that we haven't really talked about too much, but we have some women in our group who come from minorities, and there's different cultural values there, and so much, many times it's so much harder for them coming from a different culture or being part of a minority because of values within minority communities. And I just saw a really good article that was in Donna Anderson's Love Fraud, which anybody can, you know, subscribe to by going to lovefraud.com. And Donna has out her weekly newsletter. And this was about leaving abusive relationships and how hard it is for people in minority communities. It was written by Dr. Amber Ault. And I thought it was really interesting. I'll just read some and get your comment on it, Deb. It says, partners in abusive relationships with psychopaths, narcissists, and other disordered individuals often suffer in silence. This is especially true in marginalized communities. Partners' silence reinforces their isolation and reduces their capacity to end abuse and exploitation in these relationships. But stops a partner from seeking help? Among the barriers to reaching out for a reality check and support for leaving are these common factors. First of all, shame. Partners worry that their association with a toxic person reflects poorly on them and that others will judge them as they know about the abuse they are tolerating. If they've left and returned, the shame gets greater. Partners also often want to protect the good reputation of their toxic mate or the status the couple enjoys within a family or community. If friends or family oppose coupling with this toxic person, the partner faces the shame and acknowledges the decision to ignore good advice and feels unworthy of support now. Another reason is fear. Partners of personality disordered people experience many kinds of fear as they contemplate seeking help. Fears range from the fear of retribution or stonewalling by the partner to the fear of being seen as crazy when they describe what is happening. They sometimes fear that they cannot trust their own perceptions or that they aren't really seeing what they think they are seeing. The next one is hopelessness. Partners may trust their perceptions that a relationship is toxic and believe that others would sympathize with their situation, but still feel trapped by financial, cultural, and family limitations. As a result, they continue to suffer in silence, assuming that nowhere they turn will offer practical help in ending an exploitive relationship. These three limitations often affect partners of psychopaths and others with toxic personalities across categories of gender, sexual identity, race, religion, and relationship status. For members of minority groups, barriers to seeking help are even greater. Because members of marginalized groups are already stigmatized by society, they often work to protect the reputation of their communities, thinking that calling attention to dysfunction or violence within them reinforces negative stereotypes. For this reason, domestic violence and sexual assault are frequently underreported in communities of color, religious minority groups, and the LGBT community. In addition to the common forms of shame, fear, and helplessness that many victims feel, members of minority community also experience fear that others will judge them for calling negative attention to the community. They also fear the legal system will not protect them as it should. Because people from majority groups dominate criminal justice, legal property, and financial systems, turning to people in authority to seek help with a toxic relationship is extremely courageous and a vulnerable act. But it could result in the system being unresponsive or shaming or actually siding with the perpetrator. The worst-case scenario, a victim could alienate friends, family, and community members by naming the problem and seeking help, only to find themselves treated poorly by the system to which they have turned, resulting in more isolation and danger if they had remained silent. So, what do you think of that?
Well, I think there's more awareness today than when I was growing up.
Uh-huh.
I can see, you know, how they would feel like they had to keep quiet and take the abuse. Because a lot of times, you know, they're depending on this man, their husband, and they have children. They're depending on him for support. And if he goes to jail, then that could affect his job. I can understand all that, and even some families, you know, don't want to see it.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, I think it's just so many complexities, so many complications, and so many different feelings that come and emotions that come. And I know that one of the things, like people say, oh, well, why can't they just get over it? They had a bad marriage. People don't understand that this was beyond a bad marriage. There were so many other problems that came with this marriage because we didn't know what we were dealing with from the beginning until the end, right?
Right. And I say, you know, it wasn't just about him being gay, but the abuse and the narcissism and all that came along with it that was so toxic and harmful.
And I think you write a lot about that in your columns, don't you, Deb?
Yes. And it's not to say that all gay men are physically abusive, but I think the women suffer emotionally in these marriages, even if he wasn't physically abusive.
And I think that's very true. And sometimes that emotional abuse is also coupled with physical abuse, because in some cases, men are abused to their wives physically as well, also. But I think that the more you get beaten down, whether it's physically or emotionally or mentally, the less confidence that you have in yourself to do what you need to do. And that's why it really hurts me to see so many of our women who are in pain. And there are plenty of men who are really sitting and suffering, too. They're not all jumping out and going out to bars and having sex. Some of them are trying to get a better perspective of where they want to go with it. But they know it's there. It's not like, you know, they don't know, or they know it's there. It's just what to do with it. They don't know either. But sometimes they'll just go and act on it just for the moment, thinking that that's not really cheating. You know, I'm coming home, I'm going to be there for my wife and for my kids, so how could you really call that cheating?
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll come up with all kinds of justifications why they're doing things that are not really called cheating, but they are cheating, and they know they're cheating. You say that's true, too?
I do say it's true, and I do think things have changed with the law as far as physical abuse toward women. Things have come a long way since I was growing up.
Uh-huh. And what about when somebody tells you that, you know, they're not sure their husband is gay? What do you tell them?
I tell them to really listen to their gut instincts, because that's something I ignored. And, you know, if they're feeling this way, they need to listen to that.
And
because
I think that's
the last
true
thing we want to believe. I mean, it's the last thing we want to believe about our husbands. And if you're feeling that way or thinking that, there's a reason that you're having those feelings.
And I know that it's true. This takes time. And I just feel so bad when these marriages come to an end and the woman has to fight for every little thing she's getting, including the child support and taking care of the kids and making sure that everybody's fed. I mean, it's just like really, really, right?
It's really hard for the woman.
A lot of women were caretakers throughout their whole marriages. They were taking and raising children. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden they're thrust into the world and they have to support a family because the courts aren't very fair when it comes to divorce. And even on these so-called no-fault divorces where there is a fault, you know, the women don't get what they deserve because, you know, they try to make it like there is no fault. But do you feel that these are... You know, have you seen any of the women who have come to you saying that their marriages are doing good?
No, I had somebody write to my blog though, telling me that I was wrong, that her husband had a sexual addiction, and that they were working on their marriage, and their marriage was better than ever. This was from a comment written to my blog, and I told her that. You know, sexual addiction and gay are two separate issues, although a sex addict could be gay, but, you know, her husband was seeking out men. And,
well, like I say, that's, I mean, it could happen anywhere at any time, right?
Right.
You know, these... Yeah, and it's just so sad because you look at people who stayed together for so long when they could cut their losses earlier and just say, I made a mistake. You know, why keep carrying it out? Let's end it. Maybe we can end it as friends. And I do have a lot of men who come to me who want to do just that. You know, they're not looking to, you know, make big waves and changes. They want to keep, you know, carrying on things status quo for a while. You know, which I think is a good idea. So, let me ask you this, Deborah. How about women who come to you who are looking for a plan to get out of their marriage? What do you tell them?
Oh, I think it's the right thing to do, you know, to get out. And I tell them to join a support group, whether it's your support group or Straight Spouse Network or... You know, any support group, I think, is really important because it really helped me so much. Better than counseling. I'd been in counseling with my husband for some years, and the issue never came up. I mean, I didn't know I was dealing with a gay husband.
I think you're right, because a lot of times when women come to me and they say, oh, I need counseling, and a lot of times I say to them, you think you need counseling, but you really need a support. Because, as you say, a lot of counselors have no idea what's even going on in these marriages. And usually with any kind of marriage, you know, there's problems usually on both ends. When they say that it takes two to tango or two to end a marriage, in many cases, that is true, but not in these cases. In these cases, it only takes one person, and that's the gay one. Because a gay person cannot be a good partner in a straight marriage. And, you know, he's leading a lie with you every single day, right?
Right. I mean, if there's, you know, people that know they're getting married to a gay person and they go into the marriage knowing and they accept this, I mean, to each their own, but we didn't go into this knowing, and wouldn't, many of us would not have gone into this knowing, or most of us wouldn't have.
No, I agree with you. Most of us, we knew that our husbands were gay when we were marrying them, we would have said forget it.
Right.
I mean, some might have felt, well, I can change him, so it's okay because he wants to marry me. the fact that he wants to marry me, you know, means he wants to change.
But then they knew ahead of time, and they were trying to change him. So, you know, that's different than what we're going or what we've been through or gone through with this, because we didn't know.
How would we know, right?
Right.
So, do you feel that women from different countries have different issues? Because you've worked with a lot of women from different countries also.
Well, I do, you know, think there's, you know, you're dealing with cultural issues in different countries. And some countries, you know, they really look down on gay. They expect, you know, their sons to marry, have grandchildren. And it's like, it's really hard for the men to come out as gay in some countries.
It's very hard. They're unable to, actually. You know, it's illegal to be gay in some of these countries. And that's what hurts so much, is when you see women who spend a lifetime, you know, living with men who can never be a husband to them, and they can't get divorced because it's against their culture and religion. So they're both living suck lives, right?
Right. And we're so fortunate over here that we can get a divorce. Not that I like divorce. I don't like divorce. You know, wish all marriage
No, but you're right. At least we have the opportunity to do it. And we don't have to stay in a bad relationship forever, although a lot of women feel like they need to be there. I'm not sure why. You know, either they feel a sense of guilt or a sense of remorse. And I explained to them, this divorce thing has nothing to do with you. You know, it's not something you have to feel that bad about or guilty about. You've done absolutely nothing wrong in these marriages. But, you know, I think a lot of times women still feel that sense of, I failed. That I wasn't a woman enough for him, that he felt that, you know, maybe if I would have done this or I would have done that. Because a lot of times the husbands put the blame on the wives. It's not like they're always willing to take responsibility, right?
Right. They do. They'll blame the wife for everything.
I know, and that's the sad part. That's
and
not bad enough
to
that you feel like your marriage
is
at work.
You hear that enough, you start believing, you know, you start believing it, you know, that everything is your fault and everything wrong that goes wrong is your fault. You know, you hear
and
it
it's
enough.
Interesting because different people do it differently. Some people are very blatant about it. They'll say, well, you know, because you acted like this, what do you expect from me? Or because you look like this, you know, you put on weight or you still have a trim body or your hair doesn't look right. You know, they'll come up with all these physical features and why they don't want to sleep with you. So some of them are outright direct, making you feel worse about yourself. Others are not that direct, and they'll just, like, turn their backs on you as you try to make love to them because they're not making love to you. And then they'll, you know, come up with some little phrase, well, you know, honey, we just had sex, but, you know, you wanted too much. What are you, a nymphomaniac? You know, they'll call you that name. That's just enough to make you stop asking for anything. So they may not be cruel like the other ones who are looking for excuses on why they want to reject you. Sometimes it's done in a passive-aggressive way, you know, and sometimes it's just done in a manipulative way. But no matter how they do it, right?
They do. And the end result is the same for the woman, you know. She ends up feeling really bad about herself.
And I think especially, you know, here's one terminology. I know that these people are on the attack war for me, but the word bisexual. And a lot of times, you know, right now I'm writing an article for my next newsletter coming up next week. And I don't even feel like arguing the term. It's like I've gotten a number of people this month who wrote to me that they're, quote, bisexual. And, you know, they're men who are finding themselves as being bisexual. And I, you know what, I'm going to stop fighting people, and I'm going to say, okay, if you're bisexual, that's fine, that's what you are. But that doesn't mean that your wife should know that you want to have sex with men, right?
Right. Exactly right. I was reading a study done on bisexuality, and, you know, I guess they hooked these people up to some kind of electrodes to see what sexually stimulates them, you know, by letting them see the opposite sex or the same sex. And it was it showed that the bisexuals responded to same sex. You know, the men responded to men, the bisexual men.
And I agree with that, but, you know, once again, they're telling me that there's nothing wrong with bisexuality. And I agree, there is nothing wrong with bisexuality if you're really bisexual, but you just have to tell your wife about it. Because
right.
You can't be wondering why you're thinking about some gorgeous guy and ignoring her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to start realizing that, you know, I say that if you were truly bisexual, maybe you could just be happy with one partner for your whole life. Why do you even have to say you're bisexual?
Yeah.
Why don't you just say, well, I'm sexual? Not put a label in front of it. That might be a good idea, right?
Right.
Well, you know, you have to always keep trying to understand, trying to move ahead, trying to make women feel better. And Deborah, you're a very big part of that. Let's talk about your book a little bit and where people can buy it.
It's on Amazon. You can get it on Kindle, or you can order the paperback on Amazon.
Uh-huh. And can you tell about how long it took you to write this book?
About a year. It's a lot of my blog posts. Yeah, it took about a year to write it.
And do you recommend writing for people who are going through this, like journaling or, you know, just keeping a blog, talking about their feelings?
Even if it's just a personal diary, you know, for themselves, I do recommend it. It was really helpful to me.
And I agree with you.
I feel like I'd lost my voice in the marriage, and I was able to get it back thanks to you and the women at Straight Wives Club.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I say, it's very good to be able to have camaraderie and to have people understand what you're going through so you don't feel so alone. I think the worst problem that women feel when they're going through this is the feeling of isolation, like they're the only ones who are suffering with this. That seems to be the number one common factor that every woman who comes to me feels, like, how come I'm the only one in the world going through this, not realizing how many millions there are who are suffering the same way. And I think that once they have the understanding that they can have support and meet others and, you know, try to have, right?
I had two girlfriends that I've known since I was really young that both went through this experience, I mean, years ago, and they moved on past it. It was so long ago, and there weren't any support groups that I knew or that they knew of back then, and that, you know, they've moved on. I mean, I'm talking for one probably 30 years ago this happened to her. And,
wow. It's not as isolating as it seems, right?
It's not.
You know, today, there are millions of women going through this. Maybe they're not aware of it or what the problems are, but that is the problem. And by giving people education and knowledge and understanding of what's going on, eventually, hopefully, one day, people will realize that, you know, this is not isolating at all. It's every place you go, in every country, in every culture, in every religion. It's just how, you know, the religions, how they react to it, I guess, that gives a man the courage or the cowardice as far as keeping silent about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's never easy, right?
It's not. It's not easy.
So, Deborah, when people want to get your book, they can get it on Amazon, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Bonnie. Amazon or Kindle. They
uh-huh.
can download to their phone or iPad or...
Uh-huh. And in your book, tell them a little bit about what you write about, Deb.
Well, I really don't go into great detail about my life. I do go into some detail, but I'm mostly pointing out the behaviors
uh-huh.
and the experience I went through with the behavior.
And so they can get an idea from that, which is good. And you have stories from other women in there, right?
I do.
And I think that by sharing those stories, other women make a connection, too. So I think it's all good. So you can go on Amazon, you can order a Kindle, you can order it, you know, softback. And it's a wonderful book with wonderful stories in it. And when you're looking to feel connected, this is the best place to get started. Is with a good book that can tell stories of women that have the same kind of experience that you're having. And I always tell women, when you connect with other women through reading or through my newsletters or support groups, chat rooms, then you don't feel so isolated and so alone, because I think that's, once again, the worst feeling that women feel when they're going through this, that they're the only ones going through it, that, you know, depressing, they're never going to survive this. Do they have to stay with their husbands? I mean, so many unanswered questions. Because these are not like other divorces. And these are not like other situations. There's something unique and, you know, unique to itself. So that's why it's really important to get the right help. So that you get on the right foot. So,
I think it's
Deborah,
so... Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, any final words of advice you'd like to give tonight?
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, I thought it was so interesting. You know, I was talking to a woman in our group the other day, and I talked about, you know, the man that called me and the term cookout he used, and it was really something that she had received the same phone call with the same word that her, you know, wording that her husband didn't show up for the cookout. So you never know when, you know, somebody's really going to relate to something. There was another story I wrote about where my husband, ex-husband, he would, every time I planted flowers, he would mow them all down. And she'd gone through the very same experience. So,
now that's
so many of us went through, you know, so much of the same. Well, our stories might be, you know, somewhat different. We went through a lot of the same, too. We had have a lot in common.
And thank goodness for that. You make some kind of connection. That's what counts. It can really change a person's day. So, Deborah, we're going to say goodnight to our audience for tonight. And I really appreciate you being on the show.
Well, thank
and
you for having me.
And we're having you back again here next month. As you agreed to be a semi-regular, right?
Yes.
I'm so excited about that. Well, the new insights, maybe you could read us a couple of your recent blogs, because they're always so inspirational to many of us. And I want to thank all of our listeners and remind you to go to Amazon to pick up Deborah's book, and the Signs of a Gay Husband, Identifying Closeted Gay Husband Behaviors. And you can get a Kindle or in hardback or softback, and you will not be disappointed. So to all of our listeners for tonight, who will listen to us probably after the debate, not during it, but that's fine. If you can't get a copy of this program live, you can always stream it later on. And love to all of those of you who are in pain, including Scott, and to many of our women who are in pain, and hoping that you're going to get better soon. So without any further ado, I'm going to say goodnight to all of you. And Deborah, thanks again so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.